Doug Traversa is the minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Tullahoma. He completed his seminary studies at Meadville Lombard Theological School in Chicago. Doug is a retired Air Force officer, and he and his wife, Jancy, live in Tullahoma. They have several dogs and usually have a few foster dogs around the house, too. Doug will speak on the topic, Occam's Razor, putting your beliefs to the test. Let's welcome Doug.
And you know you're in a Unitarian Universalist church where before you even start the service, at least two people have come up and challenged your spelling of Occam's Razor. There are multiple spellings, and as I tell them, that's the one they used in Wikipedia, so it must be true. Although it's actually named after William of Ockham, which is O-C-K-H-A-M. And I have that in my notes, too. So there, we've got the spelling out of the way. We can move on to the gist of the talk. William of Ockham lived from 1287 to 1347. And he was an English Franciscan friar, a philosopher, and a theologian. But he's really known mainly for something called Occam's Razor, which is a problem-solving principle. And the one way, and there are, by the way, many versions of them out there. So here's a couple. When you have two competing theories that make exactly the same predictions, the simpler one is better. Now, another way to put this is the simplest explanation is usually the correct one. Emphasis on usually, because there are exceptions. Now, why would he say this and why do we apply it today? Well, if you're going to try to test a theory or test anything to see if it's true or not, the less variables you have in that theory, the easier it is to try to test it. And scientific principles, when properly applied, are a series of people trying to disprove somebody else's theory or somebody else's observation. Because if you can disprove it, you can discard it. But if you can't disprove it over and over again, it's probably true or at least usable. And I hate to get into true and false and yes and no and black and white, but in general, the scientific principle allows us to discard things that don't work if you can disprove them through testing. And Occam's Razor tells us if you've got a really crazy, convoluted explanation for something, and you've got a really simple explanation for the same thing, odds are the simpler one is right, most of the time. Now, I'm going to give you some examples of different things because the point of today's talk is that each one of us look at the things that we cherish deeply, the things that we believe, perhaps the things we have faith in, and really scrutinize them, not just today, but throughout our lives, so that we don't fall into the trap of being deceived by people who literally are trying to deceive us, as well as people who may be well-intentioned, but again, leading us down a wrong path. And so we apply Occam's Razor to different things in our lives and test them and see if they can be disproved, if the simpler explanation might be the accurate one, even though we desperately want to believe the more convoluted one. So several examples. Now, when I gave this talk at our church, I figured I would probably not step on any toes. I chose some examples that were either very old or probably not something that anyone in the congregation had experienced. And boy, was I wrong. So, we had a really great discussion afterwards, and it was fascinating. And when we have our discussion today, I can bring up some of those points, too. Now, the first one is the one that you may know, most likely know, because even the younger people out here may have heard of this fellow. His name's John Edward, and he claims that he can contact the deceased, the dead. And not only that, but he can relay messages to you if it's someone that you knew who had died. And here's how the procedure works. And he's had his own TV show. He's written books. He's been on talk shows. I mean, this guy's been everywhere and made a lot of money doing this, which doesn't say anything to whether it's true or not. It's just a fact. He has got a lot of exposure. So normally he'll have an audience, and we'll pretend you're the studio audience, and I'm John Edward. And I'll stand up here and I'll say, okay, from this side, I'm getting a younger male that has passed. I'm not sure if it's a son or a grandson or a younger brother. And by the way, I'm taking this from a tape that I watched of him. a tape that was saying he was doing a good job, by the way. It wasn't a skeptical tape. So I'm picking up this young man who's passed. Is there anyone out there who knows a young man? Okay, well, first of all, if you've got an audience and you're looking at a group of approximately 100 people in this angle here, probably someone, since they've come to the John Edwards Show, has had someone pass. So that's probably a pretty safe bet. So you may guess I'm coming down on the skeptical side. And if you think John Edwards is great, you know, we can discuss it later. But I'll tell you why I don't think he is. But I will say, don't think he is. Because I can't say with absolute certainty he's not talking to the dead. I can't say that. I don't know that. But we're going to use Occam's razor and take a look at it. So a woman stands up and she says, yes. And then this is my favorite line of the whole thing. I'm getting the impression that he passes in an event that was unexpected. Just think about that. Okay, the young man we've established has died. He passes in an event. That's sort of the definition of dying, is that there's an event involved. And that it was unexpected. Well, he's a young man, so probably unexpected, unless he's got a disease that was terminal and they knew about it. So far, nothing really risky in what he said. And so the woman is standing, and he's now talking to her directly. And he says, I'm getting a number 6. And he's making the motion 6 with his finger. I'm getting the number 6. Did something happen in June? No, nothing in June. How about the 6th of the month? Of any month? And he keeps doing the 6th thing. No. So we ruled out June. We ruled out the 6th of the month. Despite getting the 2 no's, he keeps saying, no, there's a 6. You're just not thinking of it right now, but there's a 6. And he even makes this a point to extol his genuineness. He says, you know, skeptics will accuse me of just passing by something when I don't get a hit. But I'm not passing by. There's a 6. You just don't remember what it is. No. And so even though it's a strikeout, he completely misses on the 6, and she never comes back to that 6, he turns it around to say, look, there's a 6. You just don't remember it yet. He gets a lot of misses, some hits. When this woman sits down, we still haven't established what this 6 was. He did manage to come up with, there was a car accident. Okay, that's, again, a high statistical thing for someone who has died unexpectedly. But he sort of works his way up to it. So it's called cold reading. I'm not doing my talk on cold reading, but you're getting feedback from the person you're talking to, trying to guess and go along the right path, and then the misses are sort of just set down by the side, unless it's this 6, which is just a very obvious miss. Despite the fact that there's nothing terribly radical there, he does have his own, or had his own TV show. I don't know if he's still on. He's been on Oprah and many other talk shows. Made a lot of money, written a lot of books, well known. But if you believe John Edwards can talk to the dead, you do have to make some assumptions. And I think you'd all agree with me, no matter where you come in the spectrum of believing or not John Edwards, you do have to agree with these, I would think. First of all, you have to assume and accept that there is indeed life after death. Secondly, you would have to assume that the dead can indeed communicate with at least some living human beings. Third, the dead apparently can project visual images somehow, because he was doing the number 6 with his finger. He was getting a 6. He wasn't getting just some vague general feeling. He was specifically getting the number 6. And if the dead can do that, the dead can spell out letters too. And instead of him going, I'm getting a B, they could spell out a name and he could call out a name. Because they've established through him that they can indeed transmit single digits and single numbers. So why this whole vague... I mean, they could spell words for him. It would be very specific. One reason I don't think much of John Edwards. The dead are happy to speak or capable of speaking to John Edwards, but not to you. If you have lost this loved one, they can't talk to you, even though you have this huge emotional tie. So there's something special about him that you don't have that allow the dead to speak to him? You have to assume that. You have to assume they follow Edward around from show to show and know what his know where he's going to be and when he's going to do a show and when you're going to be there so they can talk to you through him at his show scheduled at this time at this location. So the dead have that capability. They can access his website and see where he's going to be. Finally, the dead can communicate in a way that does not require a physical body for them to communicate to him. They do not have a physical brain. They do not have sense organs. They do not have a voice. They don't have vocal cords or a tongue or a mouth to make sound. But somehow, without any of the physical apparatus that you and I use to communicate, they can communicate to him. Now, those six things are assumptions you have to make if you think John Edward can speak to the dead. And those things may be true. I cannot prove that they're not true. But those are big assumptions. And if you are going to be a person who says, I can speak to the dead and I can do all these things, that's an amazing assertion. And you'd better have some good evidence for it. Good evidence. Because you are turning science upside down if all these things are true and you can demonstrate it. So you better put your money where your mouth is. Or, using Occam's razor, we can assume that Edwards is a skilled showman using cold reading techniques, asking lots of leading questions, pulling information out from the audience members, and maybe even doing a lot of pre-show research with people planted in the audience as they're sitting there talking to each other or as they're coming into the building. And maybe he's a liar who makes a lot of money scamming people who are grieving and taking advantage of them because they desperately want to speak to someone who has died. There are other explanations. One that I came up with is perhaps he's actually just picking up mental emanations from the people in the audience and there's no dead person involved, but rather picking up from them what they want to hear, and he has some kind of telepathic power. Again, that would be an amazing scientific breakthrough, but it is another way of looking at things. Now, the obvious thing about Occam's razor is you're immediately going to say, well, the easiest explanation is that he's lying, because otherwise we would have something really amazing going on. But let's give him the benefit of the doubt. If you want to test this ability, you can certainly do it in ways that's going to establish whether or not he's really speaking to dead people. Instead of having an audience of several hundred people in front of him, why don't you just put him in a room and put four people around him at, you know, the four cardinal directions? And then he's only trying to get information from four people instead of a couple hundred. Or maybe just one person, and do one person at a time. Carefully protected from both him or any of his workers so that they can't pick up information from these people. I mean, you could really have a nice, sterile, secure environment where no trickery could go on, and you could test this. To the best of my knowledge, this has never happened. We'll talk about that in the next hour. because that again, that would be earth-shattering if that were true. So Occam's razor applied says the simplest explanation is best most of the time, but not necessarily all of the time. Another fellow, well, before I get to him, I'm going to expand on this talking to the dead, because I had something that happened to me in my life. Just before I went to Afghanistan, I was fostering dogs, and we had adopted out a dog that was a little bit skittish. And after I got to Afghanistan via email, I heard from the rescue group that the dog had run away from the new owner and disappeared. And the poor owner was distraught and looked everywhere for days and couldn't find this little dog. And finally, in desperation, she turned to an animal psychic who claimed that she could speak to dead animals and could help her find out, or if the animal was alive, could find out where the animal was. In either case, could find this missing animal for you. And so they shared this story with me. And one of the things that came back from this psychic was that the dog had told her, or she had picked up from the dog somehow, that this dog was terrified of all men. Now, you know, I'm over in Afghanistan at this point and having a pretty bad time, as you might imagine. And I hear this story from this alleged psychic who I can prove is wrong because I took care of this dog and the dog was not afraid of me. So the dog's not afraid of all men. So I post on this, you know, this woman is taking advantage of this poor woman who is grieving and distraught, who has lost this dog. This woman's a fraud. Because I can tell you authoritatively that this dog, whose name was Charlotte, Charlotte is not afraid of all men. And if this psychic is saying this, the psychic is wrong. And it's BS. And I wasn't pulling any punches because I don't have sympathy for people who take advantage of the grieving. And boy, did I get an earful from a couple. Like, how dare you take away this hope from these poor people that this psychic told her what had happened? And I said, it's a lie. And I'm sorry, it's a lie. She's lying. And call me names, whatever you want to say, it's a lie. Because I lived with this dog. You know this dog wasn't afraid of all men. There's something bogus going on here. And when money is changing hands between the grieving and someone who's taking advantage of the grieving, I'm going to call it. So I lost a few friends probably at that point, but that infuriated me. So when that sort of thing happens, I do get angry. And I got a lot angrier back then than I might today, but I still get angry because people always take advantage of other people. Some people do. When there's money involved and they can take advantage of people who are desperate, be it health, be it loss of a loved one, there's plenty of people out there who are happy to take your money and give you some hope. And they're just being deceptive, and that infuriates me. Now we're going to go away from that to another fellow, and only you old timers are going to remember this. If you're my age or older, you will, and if you're younger, maybe a fellow named Uri Geller. Okay, Uri Geller, back in the 70s and 80s, and I think he's still alive today. His big thing was spoon bending, amongst other things, and he got on the talk shows and. And his thing was, you can do it too. And there were supposedly spoon bending parties and all sorts of stuff. But what he would do is he'd take a spoon and he'd hold it or gently stroke it. And that spoon would just bend and snap and fall apart. And it was just, wow, that's really cool. So he got on the Johnny Carson Tonight Show back when Johnny Carson was doing it. And if you don't remember Johnny Carson, that was a big deal. Tonight Show was really something. And Uri Geller gets on there and he's going to demonstrate all these cool things he can do. Another thing he can do is detect water, like water dowsing or water witching. So unfortunately for him, Johnny Carson used to be a stage magician. Not only that, Johnny Carson had friends who were stage magicians. And one of them was named James Randi, who's very famous in skeptical circles. And the two of them got together and said, if he's genuine, we're going to make sure he's genuine. Don't let him get near any of the spoons. No one gets near the spoons. No one gets near the water. No one gets near anything. Keep him away from it all. And so what happens, and you can go watch this on YouTube. It's great. He comes out. They introduce him. He's sitting there. And there's this big table sitting there full of spoons and full of little sealed containers of water, amongst other things. And Uri Geller is already starting to look nervous. What is this? And Johnny's very, oh, well, we just want to see what you can do. And we got all this stuff for you so you can show us what you can do. And he's reaching over the water and going, I'm really tired. I need to rest a little. And he couldn't do anything. The whole night was a complete failure. He couldn't bend any spoons, couldn't detect any water, and kept going, wow, I'm feeling a lot of negativity. It's like I'm really being, no, 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 says Johnny. You know, here's the stuff. Bend a spoon. We just want to see what you can do. This is great. Total flop. Now, Occam's razor tells us the simplest explanation is he couldn't do it because he's a fraud. I can't tell you with absolute certainty Uri Geller is a fraud. What I can tell you with absolute certainty is when the environment was controlled and when he couldn't get near those spoons ahead of time, he couldn't bend them. That I can tell you with absolute certainty. And if you want to see more along these lines, you can see James Randi do the exact same thing while he's talking to you, and he holds up spoons and they bend, he touches them and they flop over. He goes, I can do it. It's a trick. I don't have telekinetic powers. I'm not a psychic. I can do this while you're watching me. What do you think? Is Uri Geller genuine, or is he doing what I'm doing? Are we going to overturn everything we understand about science? Are we going to assume it's a trick because I can do it? I can't prove he's a fraud, but I can show you that I can do the exact same thing and no special abilities are required other than sleight of hand. So now you have to ask yourself, you know, what you believe based on that evidence. And again, can't prove with absolute certainty he doesn't have telekinetic powers, but I can show you magicians who can do the same thing without any special abilities. Another example is a fellow named Peter Popov. He was a faith healer, and he was caught in a big scam by James Randi, same guy, because in his healing services, big Pentecostal healing services, he could, you know, tell people, oh, you live at so-and-so street, and you're suffering from this. And it's almost like he could read their minds and stuff, and it was very impressive, and then he'd do his faith healing routine. Unfortunately for him, James Randi went in with a radio scanner, police scanner, picked up the frequency he was using with his wife, who was reading the little prayer cards that the people filled out at the other end, or listening in as they were coming into the church and passing all this information on to him. And you can watch videos of this on YouTube, and it was on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. As he would go up to someone, you could hear the playback of his wife telling him what to do and walking him through this each step of the way. He was exposed, and he did go bankrupt through this, found to be a fraud, and left the ministry in disrespect. However, he's back today, and there are still people who follow him, even to this day, knowing that he had been exposed as a fraud. A real faith healer, now we're going to get into the religion side of it, because he's claiming his powers are from God. If you are a real faith healer, and you are claiming to do this by the power of God to prove something about God, then you can prove it by going into hospitals and facing people who are really facing death and really healing them and really amazing the doctors and the nurses there. And you can do it consistently and repeatedly under close observation. And the lame really will walk and the blind really will see. And it's not in a controlled environment back at your church. There's a test somewhat like this in the Bible. It's a great story. And my wife always dislikes it when I do Bible stories because, you know, we got that fundamentalist baggage. But this is a great story. If you're going to conduct a test and you're going to say, my power is from God, this is a great story. It's from 1 Kings 18. That's the Hebrew Bible, or as Christians have stolen it and called it the Old Testament. It's from the Jewish scriptures. It's back when the nation of Israel had been split into two. So you have the southern kingdom of Judah and the northern kingdom of Israel. And the northern kingdom of Israel had bad king after bad king. And a bad king is defined as a king who is worshiping false gods. None of the kings of the northern kingdom were godly kings. About half of the ones in the southern kingdom were, give or take. Northern kingdom's just an endless array of people worshiping false gods. This king was called Ahab. You probably know his wife better than him, Jezebel. So King Ahab, Queen Jezebel, they're worshiping a Canaanite god called Baal. They're supporting all the prophets of Baal, hunting down the prophets of Jehovah or God and killing them or imprisoning them. And God tells Elijah, go to King Ahab and tell him, I'm really fed up with this nonsense. It's not going to rain anymore unless you say it's going to rain. Go tell him that. And so Elijah goes up to Ahab and says, it will no longer rain by the power of God's command unless I tell you it's going to rain. And immediately Elijah runs for his life and hides for 3 years, during which time there's no rain. At the end of those 3 years, God tells him, okay, now it's time to go out and we're going to show him who's the real God. Because 3 years of drought's obviously not cutting it. They're still hunting down my prophets. They're still worshiping Baal. And Elijah's not real excited about going out and seeing Ahab and Jezebel, but he does. And Elijah says, I'm the only prophet of the Lord here. There's 450 prophets of Baal. We're going to have a test. We're going to decide once and for all who's the real God. And he says, get two bulls, bring all your prophets. We're going to settle this. So 450 prophets of Baal come, and he says, here's two bulls. Pick the best one, whichever one you want. We're going to see if your God will accept your sacrifice. You pile up the wood, you kill the bull, you cut it into pieces. The only thing you don't do is light it on fire. Your God has to do that. So they prepare everything, the meat's on the wood, ready. And the prophets of Baal start that morning, and they're dancing and praying and calling to their God. Nothing happens. Around noon, after this has been going on all morning, Elijah says, well, maybe you need to pray louder. If Baal is really a god, maybe he's just lost in thought. Maybe he's busy. Maybe he's traveling. Maybe he's asleep. Why don't you yell louder and wake him up? So Elijah's being a real jerk about all this. And so they start yelling louder, and they cut themselves, and they're splashing their blood on the altar and on each other and just working themselves up into a frenzy all afternoon. Nothing happens. And finally, when it's evening, he says, okay, you've had your fun. Nothing's happened. Now we'll see if the Lord is the real God. So he sets up his altar. He lays 12 stones around it for the 12 tribes. He cuts the bowl up, lays it on the wood. Then he digs a ditch around it. And he tells people, take 4 jars and fill them with water and bring them here. And so they do that. Pour it all over the wood. Okay. And they do. And the wood's nice and wet. Go do it again. 4 more. Dump it on the wood. Do it again. So they do this 3 times. 12 giant jars of water. Pour it all over the wood. It's flowed down. It's filled the ditch with water. This thing's totally drenched. And then he says, Lord, you are God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel. Prove that you are the God of Israel and that I am your servant. Show these people that you commanded me to do all these things. Lord, answer my prayer so the people will know that you, Lord, are God and that you will change their minds. And fire from the Lord comes down, burns up the sacrifice, the stones, the wood, the ground around the altar, everything's dried up, all the water's gone, just this gigantic blast of fire comes down and consumes it. Now that's a test. That's a test. Because if you're doing God's will, nothing's going to get in the way. You're not going to be afraid to go into a hospital and say, take me to the blind people. I'll make them see, because this power is from God. But that's not how the faith healers work. Occam's razor. If you're claiming to have the power to heal that comes from God, the simplest explanation is you can do it under those kinds of circumstances. And if you're not willing to do that, Occam's razor, simple explanation, you're a liar. You're a fraud. And if you're not, prove it. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary proof. If you can really heal through the power of God, great. Do it. But don't pretend and don't hide. Now, Unitarian Universalism asks you to question your beliefs. At our church, it's on the sign in front of our church that says, to question is the answer. Right there on Highway 55, right under Unitarian Universalist Church of Tullahoma, to question is the answer. That's what we chose. That's from one of our hymns, by the way, if you don't know that. Being aware of our own blind spots and predispositions is valuable. And I have predispositions, guilty as charged. I think it's essential to ask for proof. I am a skeptic. As much as I love, and I do love reading stuff about Bigfoot and UFOs, Loch Ness Monster, I grew up on that and I still love it. I think it would be cool if aliens, if they were friendly, came and visited us. I look forward to that day. And there's no reason why it couldn't happen. But I am very skeptical of the stories up to this point. I've studied extensively the alleged UFO crash at Roswell. I don't think the US government is hiding alien bodies and alien technology, but it's a great story and I love reading about it. But the evidence is somewhat lacking because our government really couldn't hide that. Something that staggeringly important for this length of time. If nothing else, WikiLeaks would have had it out by now. But I love the story, and I think it would be great if something like that happened. But I am, my reality tunnel is skepticism, but I think it'd be cool if some of this stuff were true. I think it'd be great if the dead could communicate with us, if there is life after death, and they could talk to us. I'm not convinced John Edward is doing that, or any of these other people, but I would love to see that proven true. But I do expect something of that level of earth-shaking, new understanding of our reality has to have rock-solid proof. Not a TV show, and not visits with Oprah. It needs more than that. And if you can really talk to the dead, you will put yourself up to any scrutiny necessary by any skeptic necessary. Just like Elijah, keep pouring water on the wood. No one's going to doubt this one. There's no tricks. Water on the wood. That's what I expect. That's my reality tunnel. If you think I'm being unfair, let's talk about it afterwards, because you know I don't always have all the answers, but I think, for me, I do demand proof. And I think that's important in all the things we do. Unitarian Universalists, when we come together, we have people from every range in the spectrum of beliefs. You have this, the hard-nosed skeptics, atheists, agnostics, all the way to people of great faith and all sorts of different things. God, the God and goddess, multiple gods, all sorts of things that would be called pseudoscience by some, to others are very important and meaningful. And so when we come together like this, it's not going to be hard to step on toes if you want to say, I got this answer and I'm right. And if you disagree with me, you're wrong. So it's always good to try to keep an open mind and understand your own limitations too. So my limitation, which I freely share with you, is I am more skeptical than not. But even at that, I do things that people look at me and say, "Why? That's crazy." Like, you know, I practice Zen Buddhism. I sit and stare at a wall every day. That's kind of crazy. You know, why would you do that? And so, you know, we can talk about how you test whatever faith you have, too. And sometimes you're willing to say, I don't need the evidence. Sometimes something's so important, it's like, I don't need to test it. Here's why I don't need to test it. As long as you're honest with yourself about that, that's fine. As long as you're not trying to impose that on someone else, that's fine. It's when you start getting to the, I have the absolute answer, or you must think like I do on this point, then you start having the problems. Do you want to believe that the world is flat? I don't think we have any flat earthers in here. This one I didn't have trouble with at my church. There is today, as we speak, a flat earth society with a website. There are still people who believe the world is flat. Now, to believe the world is flat, you have to deny not only that the world is spherical, you have to deny a million other things. I couldn't even count them all. You have to deny that we've been to the moon, because the moon isn't what we think the moon is if the world is flat. It's something entirely different. We have to believe that all those satellites that allegedly orbit the Earth really aren't, that all these people who fly around the Earth are lying or being deceived somehow, all the sailors who go on ships that go around the world are lying or being deceived. If you could just keep going with all the stuff, the giant, insane cover-up that would have to go on for the world to really be flat. But there are people who allegedly believe it. And if you want to reinforce that, you can read all the stuff on the Flat Earth Society website and reinforce in your mind that the world is flat. They'll be happy to help. Occam's Razor, on the other hand, says, the world's probably round. That's the easier explanation. So either billions of people are deceived or lying or part of the scam, or the world's really round. That's the easier explanation. Which proposition is simpler? So we ask ourselves these things as we try to find truth or meaning in our lives. That's what this all boils down to. There are plenty of people in the religion business, in the spirituality business, who frankly are hucksters and want to take advantage of you and want to take your money and want to scam you. Because much like the people who know you're hurting when someone has died and are happy to pretend to talk to your deceased loved one, there are people who will pretend to tell you they know all the answers and will be happy to have you follow them. And whether it's power or money or adoration that they crave, they're willing to take advantage of you. And I urge you all to question whatever it is you hold dear. Just hold it up to severe scrutiny. If it's really important, if it's really valuable, it'll hold up under that scrutiny. Don't be afraid to say, I've been tricked. I've been tricked. I've been tricked plenty. I know what it's like to be royally taken to the cleaners. Because I've been there. I've been there for college. I've been there for 4 years of teaching, poverty wages, because I was serving the Lord. I know what it's like to be taken advantage of. I've lived that life. Don't let it happen to you. If it has happened to you, if it is happening to you, don't be afraid to acknowledge it and take a turn. That's okay. We all get tricked. Now, this being said, and me acknowledging my skepticism, the universe is still full of marvels, things we don't understand. That's what's exciting. There really are tons of things we don't understand. We just don't have to be open to those who take advantage of us. We don't have to be gullible to appreciate those wonders. So test our beliefs rather than accepting them uncritically. For by doing this, our journey to finding truth and meaning, to exploring the strange, wonderful universe we live in, is going to be a meaningful and happy, hopefully successful trip. We have a greater chance of success when we just make ourselves look closely at what we hold dear. And that's all I'm suggesting ultimately in this. Hold it up to the light of scrutiny, and if it's important and good, it will be okay. It will hold up under that scrutiny. And in my humble opinion, this means everything in our efforts to find truth and meaning in our lives is going to be much more beneficial and much more successful. Thank you.